Howl of the Hearth World by Aaron Dembski Bowden, read by Stephen Perring. His name was 13 Stars Falling. He was the one to spit upon the ground before the Lord of Winter and War.
There's your answer, Russ.
The Lord of Winter and War was a king without a throne. When he gathered the Einherjar Bloodsworn, he did so without ceremony, holding a warrior's court on the bare earth. Every soul stood equal to his kinsmen, and every warrior present knew that the day would end with the fall of an executioner's axe. All eyes lay upon the 6 souls awaiting judgment beneath the weeping storm. They stood without any attempt at formation, though instinct had each of them standing with enough room to draw and swing a blade. Rain drenched the brothers as they stood before their master, soaking their wolf pelts and polishing their grey ceramite to a greasy sheen. The wind still carried the chemical reek of burned fuel, a legacy of the Legion's recent planetfall. No warrior's court would ever convene in the void. Tradition was tradition, and not even the Lord of Winter and War could decree otherwise. Fenrisians and Terrans alike had a right to die with their boots upon honest earth. Jarls and thanes from other companies formed a ring around the accused. Armed and armoured for battle, these chieftains murmured amongst themselves, their voices as deep and low as rousing bears. Talismans and charms were exchanged in place of meaningless coins as they gambled without shame on the lives of their kinsmen. At last, Russ spoke. Outsiders often likened his voice to a canine snarl, yet here amongst his sons he was but one of many with a feral edge to his words.
"That's the last refusal I will hear from Howl of the Hearthworld,"
13 Stars Falling nodded.
"Then don't ask us again."
The High King smiled, a thing of bared teeth and flashing eyes. He was ageless in the way that only godlings are ageless, and scarred in ways that a coward would never be scarred. 2 wolves prowled by his side, loyal and hunter keen. The Lord of Winter and War idly ran gloved fingers through the nearest beast's fur.
"I offer you honour," he said, "and you return it with defiance. You have offered us banishment, my king. We refuse it. We will stay and hunt. We will fight with the Legion, as we were born to do."
"I see." The Imperium might know the Primarch by a wealth of names and titles, but to his warriors he was the Lord of Winter and War, or, more recently, the Russ, first and most noble son of the old Russ tribe. And in the face of his son's defiance, Leman of the Russ was still smiling. Morbid merriment twisted the scars on his weathered features. Privately, he wondered, as he often did in these moments, if the weeping sky was an omen. If so, it seemed an unsubtle one.
"You know I'm within the rights of the Bloodsworn to take your skulls for this. Is Howl of the Hearthworld so keen to surrender its heads to my sword's edge?"
13 Stars Falling stepped forward, proud in his war-mauled crusade plate, prouder still of the brown fur cloak now turned sodden black by the rising storm. By the reckoning of his people, 13 Stars Falling was an old man, one of the very first wolves to sail from Fenris at his Primarch's side, scarred but still breathing, despite all that the galaxy had thrown at him. Many of the first Fenrisian generation were gone into ashen memory, fallen amongst the thousands of battles fought by the Vilka Fenrika across the emergent Imperium. Most of the survivors were long since promoted out of the first packs, assigned with all honour to roles within the Lifesworn Wolfguard, or given the right to lead whole companies. 13 Stars Falling had fought hard, not in order to rise, but in order to remain where he was. He was a hunter, a stalker, a tracker, a killer. Let the logistics of marching armies and sailing fleets fall to other men. His place was with his pack, leading Howl of the Hearthworld through the blood and smoke, an axe in his hand and a roar in his throat. He scratched his chin through his braided beard, his fingers meeting the ivory rings fastened there. To him, it might seem only yesterday that his beard had been black with flecks of white. Now it was white with streaks of grey. A warrior could fight everything but time and fate. Before he spoke, 13 Stars Falling curled his lip to show his long fangs, the gesture of an elder sharing wisdom with a whelp.
It's not honour, my king, it is banishment. No matter how much you swear this is a hero's duty, exile is still exile.
The Rus turned a toothy smile upon the other war chiefs.
The Sigilite ask this of us, kinsmen. Answer me in truth. Here in the warrior's court, do you see no honour in this? The regent of Terra himself beseeches us to watch the lords of the legions.
A few of the thanes banged fists to breastplates, while others gave a low cheer not far from a murmur. The Rus laughed at their lukewarm display. He was well aware that this was a duty desired by none of them, and loved his sons for their honesty in saying so. But duty was duty. 13 Stars Falling was unmoved. His cragged features, weathered and darkened by countless wars beneath countless suns, stared flatly towards his king.
If Malkador asks for watchers, then send watchers. We are warriors, Rus. And yet every other pack has agreed without this stench of rebellion. It is not our place!
13 Stars Falling bared his teeth in a snarl, saliva spraying from his clenched jaws.
We have spoken with Shadow of the Low Moon, as well as Night's Voice. You send them towards battle, even if it means serving with the other legions. Yet you send us away from all hope of war. The other packs offered no defiance because they aren't being chained up in a cargo hold and shipped to Terra. You offer them new battlefields. You offer us only exile.
Rus was no longer smiling. Proud he might be, but patient he was not.
The time for spit and spite is past, and the time for responsibility is upon us. Malkador asked this of me, and I will provide him what he requires.
13 Stars Falling shook his head, defeat creeping up his spine. There was no hiding the rage in his eyes, but it was the rage of a beaten beast.
How are we to take pride in the bloodless, warless fate of peasants and traders and farmers?
He said the last word as a foul-tasting curse.
I care little for what pride you take in this purpose, kinsman. I've enjoyed your defiance, and I commend you for the fire in your hearts. But press on with it, and Sixth Legion archives will forever record you as the first and only pack to refuse the orders of its Primarch. Is that the legacy you wish for Howl of the Hearthworld?
Silence reigned, sudden and sharp. No one was willing to speak, not even 13 Stars Falling.
I thought as much, Rus said at last.
I will grant you the Demarcus for your journey to Terra. Be ready to leave within 12 hours.
Howl of the Hearthworld stood motionless, going nowhere, saying nothing. Instead, it was Laughing Yarmag who stepped forward, taking the place of 13 Stars Falling. As war chief of Cry of the Grieving Dragon, Jarl of Tolv, and master of many packs, he had the right to speak for any of them at a warrior's court. And speak he would.
My king,
he said, looking up at Rus with eyes the same grey as the storm above.
Your king listens, Laughing Yarmag. Rus,
the chief said in his stern and unsmiling manner.
It cannot be this way. I cannot send warriors of my company to do a task that I would refuse myself. If you send Howl of the Hearthworld to Terra against their will, I will journey with them.
He gripped the bronze torque around his throat, one armoured hand holding tight to the thick, tarnished metal ring. Leman of the Rus had bent that torque around Laughing Yarmag's neck himself when the warrior first ascended to command. For the first time since the court was convened, the Primarch hesitated. Rare were the nights when his sons could surprise him. And yet here was one of the Legion's great warlords ready to tear the torque of rank from his neck, abandoning his forces to serve with a single wayward pack. The air felt colder, and not from the wind's chill. Cry of the Grieving Dragon was a significant force within Tolv Company. Losing one of their packs was nearly meaningless, but losing their leader would be a different tale.
A noble sentiment, yet who would lead the cry of the grieving dragon in your absence?
I care not. My successors will fight for the Torque.
Russ let the possibilities play out behind his eyes, liking none of them. But the warrior's court had passed the point where it might end well. He went with his instinct, as he did in all things. Intuition always served him well.
Be it so. You will go with Howl of the Hearthworld.
Laughing Yarmak pulled the Torque open with a quiet whine of straining metal and cast the ring to the ground before his Primarch's boots. Silence reigned for another few heartbeats.
This isn't exile, Russ said once more. You say this is no honour, and here at this warrior's council we will speak the truth. You are right, kinsman. It's no honour at all. It's nothing more than a gesture of the Sigilite's diplomacy. He cannot have watchpacks following only some of the Primarchs. It must be all or none.
Then it should be none,
laughing Yarmak dared to say. Many of the gathered Jarls nodded at his words.
The Allfather would not wish for us to do this. It is not our... The Allfather toils in the Terran catacombs!
Russ's voice became a grindstone growl.
The regent governs in my father's absence. Let that be the end of your refusals.
He softened his tone, fighting back the first touch of true anger.
The Sigilites wearing us will pass in time. A handful of years on Terra, standing at my brother Dawn's side. That is all I ask of you.
Good, sire. Because that's all we're giving you.
13 Stars Falling tilted his head back for a moment, baring his throat in subtle submission. His pack brothers did the same. None of them took any pleasure from the Primarch's words, but as loyal sons, they accepted them.
Call us back to war soon, my king. Don't let us die peaceful deaths on Terra.
One of the regent's emissaries awaited them aboard the warship Demarcus. Prelate Quilim Ye was a small and slight man, robed in black and marked out immediately by Malkador's stylized sigil worn as a gold amulet around his thin neck. His voice was toneless to the point of monotony, which amused and disgusted Howl of the Hearthworld in equal measure. He showed no fear of them, which would at least be understandable. Instead, he displayed little more than bland focus, considering it best not to antagonize the barbarians any more than necessary. It was his duty, he informed the wolves, to record the minutiae of their roles of honor to date for detailed entry into the Terran archives. The throne received full accountings from every one of the Imperium's expeditionary fleets, including Legione's Astartes citations and casualty lists, but the flow of information was slow and unreliable at best, given the distances involved and the vast reams of data being transferred from one side of the galaxy to the other. For an actual return to the solar system, with Legion warriors standing on precious Terran soil, a more immediate accounting was required. This was how he greeted them in one of the ship's briefing chambers shortly after they came aboard. In response, one of the pack spat onto the deck before him. Rather than feel any insult, Quilim was faintly charmed by the disrespectful gesture. He had studied the Sixth Legion and their primitive homeworld for many years and knew many of the Fenrisian rituals and traditions carried through the Space Wolves' ranks. Spitting wasn't merely a dirty habit to them. To some tribes, it was an old superstition to ward off ill luck. To others, it was a way of showing displeasure, refusing to heed another's words. In this case, Quilim suspected it might be a little of both. How very hostile, he noted with nothing less than perfect politeness. Am I to assume you would rather be sailing to Prospero with your legion than making this journey to Terra? The wolf that had spat now shook his head.
Already you show your ignorance, scribe. The Einherjar goes to hear the Warmaster first. Horus Lupercal wishes to speak with the Lord of Winter and War, only then would the rout sail onward to the court of the Crimson King.
Interesting, thought the prelate. Malkador would find that very interesting indeed. Of course, replied Quilim, still absolutely neutral. Forgive my dated information. Now, as to my duty, if you would list your names and ranks, we can get underway. I realize it seems a chore, but the entirety of the 7th Legion underwent the same rigorous...
Shut your mouth! Said one of the other wolves, or I shall kill you!
The prelate hesitated. The cybernetic stylus in place of his left index finger hovered above the scratched surface of his worn data slate. He observed them, these towering, hulking, unwashed warriors with iron rings bound into their braided beards and their faces marked by jagged runic tattoos. They stank of sweat, of weapon oils, of old furs left out in the rain. He drew a breath to reply, then exhaled it softly as every pair of grey-blue eyes in the chamber stared into him with bladed intensity. Slowly, calmly, he put the data slate down upon the central table. The wolves ignored him at once, sharing bitter smiles and snarled words in their guttural fracas of a language. Quilim endured the indignity of being ignored for several minutes. He cleared his throat during what he hoped was a lapse in their growled and toothy conversation.
"You're still here," said one of the wolves.
This one had an axe over his shoulder, a weapon as long as Quilim was tall.
"Why is that?"
But the prelate had not risen to his admittedly modest rank by being easily cowed. He admired order above all, and his duty was to leave order in his wake, no matter where he went. He was, in his own way, just as responsible for bringing peace and stability to the galaxy as these ceramite-clad barbarians, and Malkador had not chosen him for this journey on a whim. The Sigilite trusted him, trusted his efficiency. "I require the details of your rolls of honour," he said, keeping his tone calm, the way one might speak softly to an untamed beast for fear of igniting its temper. "If you want me gone from your presence, then cooperate with me, and I will leave with significantly more haste. Let's begin with your names and ranks, if you please." The first to speak was Laughing Yarmak. He was a scarred old greybeard, his armour encrusted with bronze runes in one of the several dozen regional tongues of his hearthworld Fenris. He was warlord of Cry of the Grieving Dragon, respected Jarl of Tolv, and once this foolish exile was a thing of the past, he would fight for his place once again. He had been given his Fenrisian deed name by smiling kinsmen who believed that his humour was as bleak and cold as the frost that clung to the Ett's battlements. Before this day, he led 600 men to war beneath alien suns and alien moons, shedding oceans of foe blood for the Rus and the Allfather. Now he stood with Howl of the Hearthworld, oaths sworn to them during the banishment they now shared. But he said none of this. These weren't things for outlanders to hear. Instead, he gave a name and a rank that meant almost nothing to anyone within his legion.
"My name is Yarmag," he said, "chapter master of the Grieving Dragon and commander of the 12th Great Company."
Prelate Quilim, yea, licked his thin lips as he wrote the words down. He evidently missed the mocking smiles that the wolves shared with one another. The next to speak was a white beard, where Laughing Yarmag was merely greying. His beard was braided all the way down his breastplate, and his face was the leathery tan of old hide. He was 13 Stars Falling, Thane of Howl of the Hearthworld. He had been named for the night he first drew foe blood in his 10th winter, when the sky rained fire upon his tribe's lands. He had been a boy in the Rus tribe when Leman rose to rule, and he sailed with the Primarch into the stars when the Allfather beckoned them to conquer all of creation at his side. But, like Laughing Yarmag, he said none of this.
"I am Kargir," he told the prelate, "sergeant of 19th Squad."
And on it went, one by one. Howl of the Hearthworld gave the names they had carried as children, keeping their true names away from the ears and the quill of this outsider. The next to speak wore wolf pelts of dirty white, marked with filthy pinkish patches where blood had fallen, settled into the fur, and had been scraped away far too late to ever look clean again. He was Echo of Three Heroes, named by his grand matron, the elder of the Vakria tribe, to honour the ancestors he so resembled. He heard the ghost whispers of his forefathers when foe blood hissed on the melting snow.
I am Vagar, he said. I serve in the squad of Sergeant Cargia.
And you? The prelate asked the next warrior in line. This wolf's hair was short, an unruly thatch of dull brown atop his head. His beard was cut short but uneven, as though the warrior had done a barber's work alone with a knife and no mirror. He was kin to the night, named for the blackness that sired him and the darkness that bore him. He hunted unseen. He killed unseen. He was the shadow that his brothers cast. He was the blade that guarded their backs. He was the knife beneath the shield wall.
Ordun, he said. I serve in the squad of Sergeant Cargia.
And you? The next wolf bore more savage facial tattoos than the others. Runic lettering ran from the corners of his eyes like tears, telling a tale in a language too foreign for the prelate to read. He was Storm's son, named for the tempest that raged above his tribe's wooden ships on the night his mother pushed him from her womb. He gave his first cry to the thundering heavens as his mother used her own sword to cut the life cord that bound the baby to her body. No darker omen existed than to come into the world upon a stormy sea, and yet he had prospered in battle and in life. The rune tears that ran down his cheeks were shamanic blessings to ward off the ill luck of his birth. They had never failed him.
Brandwin, he said with a liar's smile. I serve in the squad of Sergeant Cargia.
And you? Quilim asked the next, the one that had threatened to kill him. Practically cowled in thick pelts and festooned with grenade bandoliers, the warrior grinned with metal teeth set in an augmetic jaw. He was Ironsong, named for his voice, so flawed in speech because of the injuries to his face, yet flawless in fireside songs and saga tellings. His reconstructed jaw was a living lesson in taking care when headbutting a helmeted enemy.
Herrick, he said, I serve in the squad of Sergeant Cargia.
And you? The wolf was black-haired, his long mane dragged back from his face and bound into a hunter's sweep. His eyes were an emotionless, soulless blue, as pale as a summer sky. He was using a whetstone to sharpen the teeth of a chain axe that didn't need sharpening, and spoke in a voice softer than any of his kinsmen.
I am no foe's remain.
The prelate looked up from his data slate, his brow furrowing. That isn't a name. No Foe's Remain didn't blink as he stared back, neither angry nor calm, simply distant.
It is a name, he said. It is my name.
And how does one come by a name like that?
One fights, the warrior replied, until no foes remain.
Quilim licked his lips once more, unaware how openly he betrayed his irritated nerves with that particular tick.
Rykath! 13 Stars Falling interrupted. His name is Rykath. He serves in my squad.
No Foes Remain turned his dead eyes towards his pack leader, but said nothing. The prelate recorded the information, such as it was. And you? Quilim asked the last of them. The warrior's head was shaved but for twin, long, thick braids by his temples, while the back of his head was enclosed in the cradling protection of an armoured, psychically sensitive hood. His wolf pelts were black. All others were grey, brown or white. He was Fights the Final Winter, spirit speaker and war priest of the runes, the wind, the frost and the bones. He was named for his first vision quest, when he dream-saw the end of all things in a future age when the Allfather's triumph had turned to ash. He would die before he allowed that fate to come to pass.
Now, Krim, he said, I am what you would call a librarian.
A sense of stillness took form in the chamber in the wake of those words.
I notice you don't write those words down like the others, little man. Is there a problem?
Quilim met the wolf's eyes, unflinching, unblinking. The Edict of Nykea.
Ah!
Fights the Final Winter gave a slight bow, seemingly of respect.
Perhaps I should say I was a librarian. Now I stand with my brothers using nothing but bolter and blade. Is that answer more to your satisfaction?
The prelate touched his stylus to the data slate surface, yet still made no mark.
You wear the war gear of one who still uses his powers.
My shaman's crown?
Fights the final winter, reached back to tap his armoured fingertips against the psychic hood.
To remove it would disrespect the spirit of my armour. It serves no other purpose.
Quilliam swallowed, and with surprising dignity, he stood up straighter.
I will not be lied to.
The wolves drew closer. Not in an armoured tide, not with weapons howling, but with the subtle leer of warriors who dearly wish to do what they do best. The servo-rich joints of their armour purred and snarled and growled. Laughing Yarmag was the one to speak.
You've had all the truth we intend to give, scribe. Write it down and be gone from our sight.
Quilliam narrowed his eyes, and for a moment it seemed he might hesitate.
Very well, he said at last. I think that will do for now.
Ironsong keyed in the code to lock the bulkhead once Malkador's preening little scribe was on the other side of it. He exhaled through his metal teeth, huffing a breath with canine irritation.
3 months, he said to his kinsman. 3 months to Terra, and that's only if the tides are fair. 3 months of that entertaining little rodent.
13 Stars Falling watched the sealed door as if he could stare a hole right through the plasteel. His thoughts were of the prelate, and those thoughts were troubled and dark.
He was lying to us even as we lied to him. He's no mere scribe. Our runt of a prelate has the stink of Malkador's inner circle about him. If he's not a bonded part of it, he still walks in the same chambers as those who are. Be cautious around him, all of you.
Nods of assent answered his order.
3 months, Ironsong said again. 3 months while the Einjahar sailed to arrest Maglis One-Eye without us. What a story that would make. What a tale! And I am to miss it, to be chained up and shipped off in this worthless waste of time. Please let this be nothing more than a bad jest.
Kin to the Night was tossing a knife up and down, catching it perfectly at the end of each falling spin.
And I fear a cold welcome awaits us yet on Terra, kinsman. Lord Dawn of the Noble Seventh is going to be about as pleased to see us as we are to see him.
There seemed no immediate answer to that unwelcome truth. Storm's son looked to the sealed door, then back to his kinsman. A slow grin dawned through his beard.
No foes remain, he said,
his rough and oaken voice lifting in a fair impression of the prelate's airy tones.
That's not a name.
The pack, joined by their war chief, shared their first laugh since the Lord of Winter and War had first told them that they were to be banished to Terra. Even Laughing Yarmag smiled. Though true to his name, it was but the briefest of things. That was Howl of the Hearthworld by Aaron Dembski-Bowden, read by Stephen Perring.